Have about 5 to 7 minutes to make some comments, and then we'll open it up for questions. And if you're representing a group or a group of you here, we'd like to try to control that in that try to limit so that all groups get the equal amount or pretty much equal amount of time, so we don't stay on one topic, and we'll be monitoring that. So if you get cut off, don't be offended. All right, we're going to start with Representative Corsi.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me this morning. And Sandra was out there in the parking lot, motioned me to come on in, said we're about to get started. We came in on two wheels, running a little bit late this morning, but it's better to be late than to be the late Willie Corsi. So it's a pleasure to be with you today, and I appreciate you letting me be first on the program. My wife, Nikki, who is here, stand up, Nikki, is here with us this morning, has committed us to head on out to the Polar Bear Plunge. Now, Stephen, I'm not going to let David Williams bully me into jumping into the water like he did several years ago, although there may be some here that would just soon I jump in the cold lake today. Anyway, I appreciate you letting me speak first, because we're going to head that direction. What's that, Nikki? Oh, I'm sorry. So anyway, I'm going to tell you like Elizabeth Taylor told each of her 7 husbands, don't worry, because I'm not going to keep you very long. I'm glad to be with my legislative colleagues here from the West Kentucky delegation. I've known some of these folks for quite some time. Some I'm just getting to know, but they're pretty good fellows for the most part. You know, we represent different parties, and we're Republicans and Democrats and Independents, but in the end we all have the same objective, and that's to move our region of the state forward, and it's good to be with you guys. It's amazing to me that after Senator Leeper, who is our senior member of the delegation, my good friend Bob Leeper, after he retires, Stephen Rudy is going to be the old man of our delegation. He's going to be the senior with less than a decade of service in the Kentucky General Assembly. Have you been here a decade? When were you elected? Is it 2004? Okay, so you have been there for a pretty good while. I was actually in the Speaker's office, then House Speaker Jody Richards at that time, and I can remember Stephen coming in and being sworn into office at the ripe age of, were you 26? 26 years of age. Stephen and I go back a long way. We both wore the blue corduroy jackets together in the FFA. I believe in the future of agriculture, and Stephen still does. He charted his course, of course, in agribusiness, and still has that farm, Rudy's farm center there in La Center, very successful business. But I was asking Stephen the other day about his experience when he first came to the General Assembly. And he said, well, Willie, to tell you the truth, I wasn't all that familiar with Frankfort. I hadn't been there very much. And my first day of session, I found myself in the midst of a terrible snowstorm. And I mean to tell you, it was a blizzard. And so he was navigating his way up the road and on his way to the capital city, and was having some difficulty seeing the road because the snow was so thick. And he remembered back to the advice that his father Jack had given him some time ago. He said, son, if you ever find yourself in a blizzard and you're having trouble on the highway, find yourself a snowplow and get behind that snowplow until it's safe enough to get off the road or the snow subsides. And so Stephen did just that. He found himself a snow plow and got behind one of our able transportation cabinet highway department members. And he followed that snow plow. And after a good bit, he even dialed his dad up and said, Dad, I just want to thank you for the tremendous advice that you gave me some time ago. I'm going to make my way to the Capitol safely. And so he followed that snow plow religiously, probably for an hour and a half or so, until all of a sudden the red brake lights on that truck came on in front of him, and that driver jumped out of the cab of that diesel, and he made his way back to Stephen's truck and motioned for him to roll down the window. And he said to Stephen, he said, son, and he spit tobacco juice, He said, I don't know where you're trying to go, but if you'll give me just a few minutes to clear this Walmart parking lot, well, I'll help you be on your way. Is that how it happened? Stephen's shaking his head to confirm that's how it happened. But we are well on our way into the 2014 General Assembly. And this is the big one, folks. This is the budget session where the House and the Senate come together to work with the governor to hammer out and to submit our two-year operating budget for the Commonwealth. We're talking about $68 billion, Danny. That's a big figure. Billion with a B. $20 billion of that are state-generated tax dollars. That's our general fund. That's the engine that drives our state government. And it's easier for me to kind of put things in perspective when you think about a dollar, when you think about a state-generated tax dollar, David Mass, you take 44 cents out of that dollar, and that's dedicated to K-12 education. You take 12 cents out of that dollar, Fran, and that goes to post-secondary education. 23 cents of that figure, it's an enormous portion of our budget, goes to health and human services and our Medicaid budget. About 11 cents, I believe, goes to criminal justice and corrections. About 6 cents of that dollar goes to borrowing and bonding. And about 4 cents, that's all that's left, is about 4 cents to operate the rest of state government. Folks, the last 6 years have been incredibly difficult for this state government. I know Governor Beshear, when he came into office, he said he realized that the cupboard was bare, but he didn't know that the whole cupboard itself was going to be gone. And that was before we'd cut some $1.6 billion through 8 or 9 budget cuts. So we have absolutely cut this thing to the bone. State government in Kentucky is smaller than it's been in 40 years. And I think that this governor has done a tremendous job. I think everyone at this table can agree in managing, in navigating this state through what has been a crisis, what has been probably one of the worst economic downturns in the history of the country since the Great Depression, really. And add on top of that all of these natural disasters and ice storms and floods and everything except a plague of locusts, and I don't know, that may be next. But he's done a tremendous job. But we've still got a lot of tough choices to make. And we're going to be facing another round of cuts. But I think you'll agree, and I think that each member of this delegation will agree, that the governor's budget's priorities are in the right place. Folks, if we're going to be the kind of state that we want to be, we have to invest in education. Lana Bliss, do you agree with that? We have to invest in education. It wasn't so long ago that our brand in Kentucky, before it was Unbridled Spirit, was Kentucky is the state where education pays. I actually prefer that one. And I tell you, if we're going to be the state where education pays, we're going to have to pay education and pay our educators. And I'm committed to doing that. You know, it wasn't so long ago, Richard, that our motto in Kentucky was thank God for Mississippi, because we were the only state in the Union that lagged behind, that lagged behind Kentucky in educational statistics and standards. And we're not going to go back to that day. This governor's budget puts some $200 million over the next 2 years into the basic funding formula, the SEEK program, for Kentucky students. $200 million. That brings us back up to the 2008 levels. There's about $100 million in there that will go towards textbooks and teacher training and safety. I'd like to see a little bit more, Lana, in terms of technology, and we're going to be working with our Appropriations and Revenue Committee to maybe boost that figure up. Governor Beshear wants to expand preschool enrollment by 20%. That would add 5,100 more children to the program. I know it's the Kentucky Chamber of Commerce's priority. I know it's Paducah Chamber of Commerce priority to invest in early childhood development, folks, because that's where it's at. There's another $100 million that will be used to increase broadband access across the Commonwealth. And I was proud to join with House leaders and Senate leaders, along with Governor Beshear and our distinguished United States Congressman. Do I need to hurry things up? Our United States Congressman from Eastern Kentucky, Hal Rogers, because we believe that we've got to provide rural areas with better internet connectivity. Folks, obviously, we're going to be focusing on KCTCS. There's $200 million in the budget for those 16 campuses, and we have committed to President Veazey that we're going to do everything that we possibly can to include that $7.5 million for phase one of the 2D art school at West Kentucky Community and Technical College. Obviously, the six-year highway plan has $163 million in there for I-69. Of course, that will be over probably a 10-year period, but that will obviously be a huge focus of ours. Tax modernization, let me touch on that real quick. I don't think that anyone at this table would disagree that our tax model is antiquated, and we need a tax plan that that has elasticity, that grows with the economy. I don't foresee us, in all candor, raising any revenue this time for our tax program. But I will say this, and this wasn't in my prepared remarks, and I'll close here. We're going to have to, at some point, and the federal Congress is looking into this, at some point we're going to have to look into internet sales tax, folks. It's absolutely crippling our local economy, our local retailers, because what you've got is folks that are coming into our local appliance stores, and they'll come in and take a picture of their camera phone and go home with that model number, and they'll purchase it online, and it's an incredible competitive disadvantage to our local retailers. Obviously, it's a federal level. There's nothing that we can do right now except to try to be prepared to take advantage of when the Congress or the Supreme Court makes a decision to allow us to make those collections. I thank you for the opportunity to be here. You've got some great legislators, and Gerald Watkins, who's doing a tremendous job, and I regret Senator Leeper isn't here, but he's my dear friend, and I'm going to miss working with him. Thank you. God bless.
Thank you, Representative Corsi, for being with us early this morning. Okay, we're going to move on to continue to go through the let the representative speak. I'll be more diligent about cutting them off. I should have known I'd have to cut them off, you know. Representative Heath.
Thank you. Good morning. I appreciate the invitation to be here this morning and share with you guys. I'll try to watch that clock back there so I don't get too carried away. I serve on three committees in Frankfort. I serve on the Education Committee, the Agriculture Committee, and the Economic Development Committee. So what I'm going to do is talk about the things that I have personal knowledge of and hands-on. Obviously, I'm one of the freshman legislators here at this table, and they don't let freshmen in on the budget. If you guys haven't paid your dues yet, you haven't been here long enough to serve on those budget committees, so I'm going to leave that up to our more senior member to go down that road. Just to talk about Agriculture Committee a little bit, it's one of my favorites since I come from a farm background, managed a rural co-op store for a while, and now I own my own business. We build pole barns all over the country, so I come from a farming background, a small business management background, and now I own a small business, and I feel like that's my strong suit in Frankfort. That's the expertise that I take to Frankfort. I sit back and listen to debates, and there's attorneys in Frankfort, and they know all the details about laws, and I listen to people who come from the health field, and they're experts in that field, and then I listen to people debate things that have to do with education, and they're retired teachers and retired principals, and they just know all about all the acronyms and how all that works. And I think, well, my strong suit is agriculture, and I need to pay attention to what's going on in my committees so that I can let the other members of the House know when something comes up that affects agriculture, I can be their spokesman for that. We've had a slow session, it seems like to me, this is my first budget session, but it just seems like we're halfway through it and we haven't accomplished much. And it's probably because most of what's happening is happening behind the scenes and it's happening on committees that I'm not a part of. But just to give you a few things that we have done in the Ag Committee, we passed the all-important Ag Bill. And I don't know if you know what that is or not, but up until now, when you go into a department grocery store, you ladies open up the lid to make sure there's no cracked eggs in there. Well, if there's a cracked egg in there, it's against the law to take it out and put another one in its place. So we have passed a bill that you could, as long, I'm serious, I'm not saying they didn't do it, I'm just saying it was against the law. So we have passed a bill to make it legal. The only thing is that person has to take a little bit of training. There has to be a person there on site with a little bit of training. And they have to make sure that the egg that they put in place of that broken one comes from the same lot number, has the same expiration date, and it's the same size, you know, large, medium, or small. And so the customer is not getting ripped off. And somebody on the committee said, no, why couldn't we just do that anyway? What was the purpose of passing a law that outlawed replacing a broken egg? And they said, well, grocery stores get eggs from different suppliers, and their fear was that one of their competitors would put a bad egg in their box, and they would get a bad reputation for selling bad eggs. So we got all that cleared up now. I'm happy to report. I couldn't believe that Representative Corsi, the retailers were just really excited about that. We've had a few resolutions to come through the Ag Committee, and Representative Corsi ran out of time, or I'm sure he would have told you about the resolution to make Tater Day an agriculture event. So we got that done. We've also passed a resolution to make the fourth Saturday in July Cowboy Day, and this is a national Cowboy Day. A lot of other states have already done this, and from what I understand, it's a really big deal. So we're looking forward to jumping on that bandwagon. And then the Tobacco Task Force has been recommissioned for another term. So when I say things are moving kind of slow, those are the kind of bills that we've gotten passed so far and the kind of legislation that we've dealt with. Just to give you an idea, I'm just being perfectly honest with you. Economic Development Committee hasn't even done that much. So we've met a few times, we've passed a few things, and they were so important, I'd have to go back and look them up now to see what they were. But I will tell you this, in the Education Committee, our chairman is very zealous, and he's a retired principal and teacher, and Representative Graham, and he's bringing stuff for us on a regular basis and got some bills passed, and one of them was a little bit on the controversial side. We had a bill in committee to, for transparency, and we're all about transparency. And at the last minute, they throw a committee sub in there, and I don't know if you guys know what that is, but it's kind of like an amendment to the bill. And we're supposed to have 24 hours to review that committee sub before we vote on it. So we go into committee ready to vote on the bill that we've had an opportunity to read, and it's real simple, non-controversial. And there lays this committee sub in our folder. We haven't seen it. We don't know exactly what it's all about. Chairman Graham assures us that this is an important committee sub, an important amendment, and we need to just tack this on there and send it on down the line. Well, what the committee sub did was increase the number of hours that a school board member had to go to training. The way it stands now, if you've been a school board member for 8 years, you've been going through training every year. Well, by the time you get to the eighth year, you're only required to take 4 hours of training. And this doubled it to 8 hours. So seems kind of small and insignificant, but what we found out was it's another unfunded mandate on our schools because they have to pay for that training. So it passed out of committee and went on to the House floor. When it got to the House floor, we got to asking questions, and 2 hours later, finally came down to a vote. But it passed the House with a lot of controversy. I don't remember the numbers now. It was pretty much along party lines. The majority party had the majority votes and the minority party didn't. So it passed. But what we learned from those kind of things is we don't appreciate guys sliding stuff in on us at the last minute. One of the arguments was it should have been two bills. We should have been voting on a transparency bill, which we're all in favor of. And then we should have had a separate bill that dealt with continuing educations for superintendents, and we should have had time to talk to our superintendents and our board members about that piece of legislation to find out how they felt about it And then if we wanted to vote down that unfunded mandate on schools, that would be a standalone vote. If we wanted to vote for transparency, that would be a standalone vote. I had to vote against it because I didn't want the unfunded mandate to schools, but I was in favor of the transparency. So, I mean, you know, you're kind of hung between the two. And I guess watching the clock here, I think I've about used up enough time.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Heath. Representative Rudy.
I hope to go last so I could just fill in the holes. Halfway through the session, very, very important session, Representative Corsi talked a lot about the budget and the difficulty there. I am on that Appropriations and Revenue Committee, and I've decided that the appropriations are a lot more fun than the revenue. But we're going to, we began the dialogue this week finally with taking up comprehensive tax reform. And there's a lot of moving parts in the proposal that's out there, and it's a good starting point. I don't think that it'll become law. Representative Corsi alluded to the fact that I know it won't become law like it is. I don't even know if we'll be able to get it underway this session and get it all the way through the process. But I think it's time to begin that dialogue to look at what's going on with our tax structure and what we can do to get it aligned with the new economy. Senator Leeper, I wish you were here because he is the budget chairman over in the Senate. And the governor's proposal, while conceptually I can agree with a lot of things of it, when you get down to the details about who, you know, how do you pay for these concepts? And the devil is often in the details. And Senator Leeper, with a group, was up this week, pointed out a lot of concerns in this budget proposal. The fact that the bonded indebtedness goes from that 6 cents and that dollar that Representative Corsi was talking about to over 7 cents. It's an increase. The structural imbalance, the meaning we're paying for a lot of recurring expenses with one-time money. And we're to do that, you dedicate future General Assemblies more cents of that dollar. I love the KCTCS proposal. Senator Leeper pointed out the fact that the bulk of that bonding was done with tuition increases for the students. And, you know, those things are problematic. Yes, we need more money in education, but how to get there with the dollars that we have? And that's what we have to deal with in the details. You know, I'm also on the Ag Committee with these two gentlemen over here, and we do meet every Wednesday at 8:30 for some reason. And I'm on the Judiciary Committee with Representative Watkins, and it's that committee is truly the most bipartisan committee in Frankfort, because everything that deals with the actual law, the criminal and civil laws, that when you think about lawyers and the things that go on in the courthouses, that goes through that committee. And it's a room full of, I think Representative Watkins and I are maybe the only two non-attorneys on the committee. And it is a room full of conspiracy theorists looking for loopholes to get their clients off. And I've been on there since day one. You know, Will talked about my first day in the Walmart parking lot, but they put me on Judiciary, and I'm completely blown away at how crazy things get off on. And now, the conspiracy theorists, I thought that's what it was, a room full of conspiracy theorists. And now I've been on there 10 years, I found myself to be one and start looking. We also have, I'm on the state government committee, vice chairman of that. We deal with a lot of things. Major pension reform that went through last year went through that committee, and you know, we're doing a little bit of cleanup on that this year, and it's, you know, anything dealing with that other, those last 4 cents of that dollar usually goes through the state government committee. So we've got all that under the way. You know, we're halfway through the session. Over 600 pieces of legislation have been filed. 600 from the 138 of us. That's, do the math, it averages about 4.33 each. Some have more, some have less. But that is a lot of proposals of changing the current laws to be dealt with in a 3-month time. And they won't all make it. Matter of fact, we're halfway through and two have made it so far. And there'll be a lot more come up, but we're almost, I don't know, we got a lot to do and a little time to do it. And pray for your input, pray for your coverage, comments, and I look forward to answering your questions.
Thank you, Representative Beckler.
Thank you. Like Representative Rudy, I was kind of hoping to be last so I could say, well, they saved the best for last. Now Representative Watkins is going to make that statement. True or not. In any event, it's a pleasure to be here. Unfortunately, for me, after the next election, should I be fortunate enough to be reelected, I will no longer be serving the people of McCracken County. Due to redistricting, my district has changed. It had been 7 precincts in McCracken County, plus all of Livingston County, all of Caldwell County, and all of my home county of Crittenden. Because of the population shift, I will no longer be able to represent the good folks in McCracken County. However, I will be picking up a number of good folks in Christian County. I'll be representing 8 precincts there. So I do appreciate the opportunity to be here, maybe one last time for an open forum like this. I have held town hall meetings with all in every county. Even had one in McCracken County, of course, earlier. This was even after redistricting was going on. So I would ask that anybody in the district that I had been representing still feel free to contact me, and we'll try and work and see what we can do. Now, I'm not the humorist that Representative Corsi is, so I'll try to be a little bit briefer than he was as well. I don't want to get gonged out here. As the other representatives have indicated, I'll tell you my committees. I'm with Representative Rudy and Representative Heath on Ag. I'm also on Economic Development, and I'm on the Labor and Industry Committees, and I enjoy those. Like Representative Rudy, I'm not sure why we have to meet at 8:30 every Wednesday morning to go through some things, whether or not there's a bill to be considered, but we do. And interestingly enough, that is probably the most well-attended. I'm not sure if it's the biggest. Is it the largest committee? We have, you know, it seems pretty large. We're 29 people, I think, on that committee. So anyway, everybody always shows up. I'm not on the Appropriations Committee, so I have found that I've become a lobbyist, or I guess to use a more genteel term without all the negative connotations, an advocate for the priorities that I have. So the way I've worked with it is my priorities this term, and you really have to narrow them down. I believe that our correction officers and our road maintenance people, who have not had a raise in 6 years, deserve one. So I am advocating individual members on the Appropriations and Revenue Committee for in both the House and the Senate to make sure that they do get those raised. I was really pleased that I've been advocating this for in public for since late last fall, and I was really pleased to see in the governor's budget that he has things in there for those raises. There is also a piece of law that says a retention bonus should be paid to correction officers, and if the money becomes available. Now, there are some long-term consequences to that, but that's never been funded, and I'm working hard to try and see if that gets funded as well. One of the things that I have found extremely interesting is that what one might hear on radio or TV or see in print tends to be just a little snippet or a little summary of education, a little summary of the reasons and what a bill might be. I would urge you that if there is a bill, you hear something that is going on that really interests you, I would urge you to actually take a look at the bill and not rely strictly on what you see or what you hear. An example would be last night on television. The news report talked about House Bill 332, indicating that it was a bill for training, among other things, for preschool education. Now, I voted on that bill, and I read the bill, and the bill says absolutely nothing about training. The bill addresses nothing more than the administrative guidelines and setting up a grading system for preschool education. Now, it utilizes over $44 million from the federal government, and we're spending $44 million strictly according to the bill. Who knows how it will be interpreted later on or what will actually happen. We're spending over $44 million to develop a grading system for preschool education, for preschool education providers. Current law says that there should be some sort of a grading system, but it should be voluntary. Well, we no longer call it voluntary as a result of this bill, should it become law. So I urge you, before you fire off a letter or an email or call your legislator and say, what are you doing voting against this bill? Or I think you should support this bill. You may be absolutely right, but I urge you to read the bill before you do that. Now, I don't think I've taken up the whole 5 minutes, so I won't. But I just wanted to, Sandy tells me I have. Those blasted phones, you know, that they keep time. But in any event, I do thank you for the opportunity to present here, and I look forward to the question and answer session. I apologize for being over 5 minutes. Thank you very much.
Representative Watkins.
Thank you, Joe. Ladies and gentlemen, Paducah Area Chamber of Commerce, it's a pleasure to be with you this morning. Glad to be home. And enjoyed meeting with many of you this past week in Frankfort. It's always a lot of fun and good to be with Paducah people in Frankfort. You have a very effective chamber team here, I'll tell you, with President Deborah Edmonds. Congratulations on your presidency. And Sandra Wilson and Fran Johnson and everyone else, they're up there working very, very, very hard for Paducah, I'll tell you. And so you have a great team here in Paducah for the Chamber of Commerce, so appreciate them. I want to spend the bulk of my time going over my bills, and then I'll hit on some of your priority projects here and try to not to take too much time. But I've introduced a lot of bills this session because there are some things that I've been interested in for a long time and finally get a chance to try to have some impact on them. So I had to write them down, so I'm going to use my cheat sheet here to go over them a little bit and give you a progress report on some of them. But these are the ones I sponsored that I introduced myself this session. First, House Bill 39, that's my cable TV bill. Can't interfere with contracts, but when franchise agreements with local governments expire, the cable TVs of the world could continue to market, package, price, just as they've always done, but they would also have to individually price each channel. I think there are excess profits and too little competition in the industry. And when you, the very bottom package is Comcast cable here is $12.99 for 12 channels. Well, the next one is what I have. There are no premium channels there. I pay over $1,000 a year. I can afford it. I'd rather spend that money on something else, but there are people on fixed incomes and elderly people, and to spend $1,000 a year to watch a little television is exorbitant. So that's picking up a lot of traction. If I can get the committee chair to pull it up for a vote, I think we can pass that. Then there's House Bill 49, and crime and punishment's been my passion for a long time. Corrections is the second fastest growing part of our budget, about $500 million a year. We have around 22,000 inmates in prison that average cost about nearly $22,000 a year to keep them in prison. I think we need to save some money and, as to me, justice, clean the prisons out of people who really have no business being there and make room for the repeat violent offenders who do have a lot of business to be there. So a couple of my bills try to clean them out. One, House Bill 49, would make, and the reason I'm doing this, nationally 53% of people who are in our prisons are in there on drug charges. And it must be about the same in Kentucky, because my bill, out of 22,000 inmates, my bill will affect 14,000, so it's a little over half that are in their own drug possession charges. So my bill's for personal possession. I don't care what it is. If it's personal possession, it's a misdemeanor, mandatory treatment. Faith-based community could be an option, and community service. That'll clean over half out of our prisons. It should. And then another one to try to clean out is, let's see, where'd that go? House Bill 54, which won't be as effective and probably is not going anywhere, but it would increase the felony threshold from $500 to $1,000. You know, you could go steal a suit at Dillard's and be facing 5 years in prison. To me, a little bit ridiculous. But anyway, those two bills are designed to get people out of prison. They have no business being there. And then, to make room for those who do, House Bill 50, three strikes and you're out. Eight states have passed that. The U.S. Supreme Court's upheld its constitutionality. So the third independent conviction of Class A or Class B felony, it's life in prison, no probation, no parole. House Bill 51, booking photographs. This passed the Judiciary Committee, overwhelming margin this past week. And Mark Bryant was the one who brought this injustice to my attention. It was endorsed by the Kentucky Jailers Association. You have websites, there's three of them that we've been able to find that do this. They will upload mugshot sites from like McCracken County Jail and put them on their site. And then your charges could be dismissed, you could be found innocent, everything adjudicated, whatever. Your record's expunged, but somebody's got your mugshot with your charges out there, and Judge Kaltenbach was kind enough to drive all the way to Frankfort and testify on my behalf on that bill. He knows someone who for 10 years that has been out there haunting them, and they charge you almost $500 to take it off their website. They won't take it off unless you pay it, and if you pay it, they transfer it to another sister site, and then you got to pay another $500 nearly. So it's just an extortion racket. So my bill makes it a Class D felony to charge someone to remove a booking photograph on these sites, commercial sites. So I'm real optimistic on that one. That'll pass. House Bill 52 would lift the nuclear moratorium in Kentucky. That's one of your priorities here for the chamber. And I'm trying to get the Kentucky Coal Association on board, and the governor is supporting my bill. Secretary Lynn Peters is, and I've got a meeting with him Tuesday in Frankfort about this bill. And I've been talking to Keith Hall, the chairman of the Energy Committee, where it is. And we believe we have something worked out that we can move forward with. So wish me luck on this. Senator Leeper has got that bill already passed through the Senate. So hopefully we can do something with it in the House. I'm optimistic anyway. Another one of those that get tough for the violent repeat offenders. For multiple Class A, B, or C felonies, they would have to run consecutively instead of concurrently. For instance, here, my former next-door neighbor murdered three of our neighbors, and the neighborhood I grew up in, he's in prison for multiple murders. But then it was just 25 years and or to life, and they were all served concurrently. So really, he got one 25-year sentence. At 12 and a half years, he was up for parole. That's not justice. I already told you about House Bill 54, raise the felony and theft. House Bill 55 allows the governor to release veto release decisions by the Kentucky Parole Board within 30 days if requested by the victim or the victim's family if the victim is deceased. House Bill, I'll go through these real quick. House Bill 103, we all know our mental health system is broken. And this would, you'd have to consult with a district court and a family member before admittance and then before release, and then there'd be a 6 months. It's kind of like a mental health parole officer, if you will. We have got to do something in the area of mental health. Judge Kaltenbach told me about three different families who have a child in prison for murder because they couldn't get any help for their child. And experience out at the college, an employee had the, excuse my language, the hell beat out of him. They had to call an ambulance by a guy who went to Hopkinsville and stayed there about 2 weeks, was released again, and I found out that that was the 25th time that he had been arrested for such an activity or something similar. We've got to do something in that area. House Bill 104, I'm almost done. Assault on a private security officer would be a third-degree assault. That would be a felony instead of misdemeanor as it is now. House Bill 105 passed the House, 74-54 this past week. It's a I carried it for the Kentucky Sheriff's Association and Kentucky State Police and local law enforcement. It allows them to charge a fee for fingerprinting and photography for commercial or personal purposes, something they've always done. It's just the auditor's office pointed out you can't do that unless you have statutory authority, so this gives them statutory authority to do that. House Bill 109, prohibit aftermarket parts on vehicles warranted within 3 years. A person could sign off if they don't want that. And then a big one, I had passed judiciary over women with this past week's House Bill 351, allows for a temporary concealed carry permit for people who are issued an EPO or a DVO for up to 120 days, and I introduced that on behalf of the National Rifle Association. Passed overwhelmingly, and that'll pass the House and the Senate. And I'm a co-sponsor for House Bill 184, which is the informed consent and ultrasound bill. I met with Margie Montgomery, president of Kentucky Right to Life, this past week to kind of plot out a strategy to see if we can make that move. I've met with the speaker on that, and anyway, we're trying to find a way. On your priority projects, one thing, and I'll give you this, Joe. I know you're...
I'm moving in closer and closer.
Yeah. You're going to put me in a headlock in a minute and take this thing away from me. But on your priority projects, the inner loop, North Friendship Road, I have to mention this because it had everything else is in place where it's supposed to be, but this was moved back several years. And so I met with Representative Leslie Combs, who is chair of the Appropriations and Revenue Budget Review Subcommittee on Transportation, for 30 or 40 minutes or so, whatever it was, a good visit last Friday, week ago Friday. And we found the money, and that is in this year's budget, $1.6 million, move forward with that study. So that is has been moved up to the front where it needs to be. So that has happened. So thankful to get that done. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Sorry about that.